I would like now to ask Mr. Steve Moore, or liaison, to give us your always very informative updates. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair Wolf. I'm Steve Moore. I'm a board member on the State Water Resource Control Board and proud to be the liaison to this great Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board. And of course, I first want to welcome the new board members. It's a great commitment. It's a significant commitment, and we want to acknowledge your service, because the way our structure is set up, we don't adequately compensate you for your work. And I know that based on your backgrounds and wealth of experience, you're going to contribute significantly to this board moving forward. So I really think it's an honor to have you on in the State and Regional Water Board family. And also want to take the opportunity to thank Mike Jordan for his service, his excellent work on this board, and he will be missed. You know, I just got to say it was great to sit through the Heal the Ocean commemoration and honoring, and it just, you know, as a sewer engineer, it was a delight to see the power of sewer engineering to bring communities together. You know, the horizontal directional drilling that was done, the high-density polyethylene pipe that was laid, it's just fantastic to see all those smiling faces. And so I just want to congratulate the community of Rincon and Carpinteria Sanitary District and all the stakeholders there for the successful outcome. So it goes to show what we can do. Anyway, what a difference a month makes during the wet season in California. You know, a month and a half ago, we were whistling a different tune around the state, and now we're looking at maybe the driest January in recorded history, certainly in certain parts of the state. It gives us great concern, and fortunately, we've made a lot of good relationships in the last year with other agencies and local agencies and stakeholders in managing the unprecedented drought. And so we're going to build on those relationships. And earlier this month, we had a hearing with the big state water projects, the state and federal projects, talking about the drought contingency plan and going to great detail on trying to deal with all of the beneficial uses that are stressed across the board, the human uses, the fish and wildlife uses. And so it's going to be a challenge going forward. But we do look to other examples of dealing with the situation, specifically in the country of Australia. And Chair Marcus and I have attended day-long meetings and briefings on, just meeting with folks from Australia and learning about their experience. And so there's a lot we can learn from them in terms of reorganizing how we deal with water allocation and water quality protection moving forward. One of the main take-homes, there's about 10, and I won't go over all of them, but one of the main take-homes from Australia is the importance of reliable measurement of water quantity, and you know, how much is diverted, used, put back, and really looking at it as a water budget, as an accounting that needs to happen. And the state of things in California, even compared to other states, in our country, we're behind in a lot of areas in terms of measuring water. And that has to do with surface water and groundwater. So, you know, we're going to move forward with that idea, among others, ways that we can get more information using our authorities, especially under the drought emergency authorities we're given. And an example of that was a workshop that we held in Los Angeles, actually, last month in December, going over information, measurement of water use in the urban water agencies throughout the state. Thanks to the emergency regulations we enacted in July of last year and the infrastructure for data management that was set up with expertise from our new Division of Drinking Water, we and the requirement to report these data to the State Water Board. We now have an unprecedented quality data set on water use from urban agencies over 3,000 connections. And it wouldn't have been possible without this type of action. Voluntary reporting of this type of information has been the rule for all these years, and we get about 60% of the information we really need to do the water budgeting using voluntary means. And the Department of Water Resources has done this for years, but when you make it mandatory, then we get 98% to 100% folks reporting. And it's really critical, as the lessons from Australia show. So before I get into my regular routine, I did want to, and my liaison reports to the different regional boards, celebrate our centennial of the California Water Commission Act of 1913, and it became in effect in 1914. And you know that year has a lot of meaning in our Division of Water Rights. So now we're going to get confused because when we talk post 14, which 14 are you talking about? But as far as water rights go and seniority. We had a law professor, Cliff Lee from Berkeley, give an overview of the Water Commission Act in early December, the need for it, and how the State Water Commission, our predecessor of the Division of Water Rights, was set up. And it really was, water rights were based a lot on the same principles as mining claims from the gold rush. And so there was a bit of a free-for-all a lack of order. So at this point, we like to celebrate, take pause, and think of 100 years of law and somewhat order. No, law and order, sorry. And it's interesting looking at the evolution of it. In the first years, our predecessor really looked at more of a ministerial function. That is, it was the job of the Water Commission to deal with unappropriated water mostly. We have an expert here, Deputy Director Victoria Whitney, so she can correct anything I say that's not quite right. But it was about 1921, the act was amended to create terms and conditions of water rights. It really started to look at the effects on public trust or other water right holders and that sort of thing. And then there was that was 1921, and really the landmark decision of 1955 confirmed the broader authorities of what is now the State Water Board, that there is a public interest that we have to take into account. And so moving forward, there is an evolution toward dealing with the overall water budget, much like Australia has reckoned with, I'd say, pretty effectively in the last 20 years. And so we're looking to lessons learned there and what might be useful here. Not everything will be, but it's an interesting time. So let's move on a little bit. I like to do highlights on four areas when I brief the regional boards, the budget, recent activities, upcoming activities, and legislation, and activities related to legislation. On the budget, this time of year is when budget change proposals are put forward by the agencies with the governor's office to formulate the governor's budget, which comes out in January. And also, we are looking at our fees as we are a fee-supported agency now, regional and state boards. I'll just say that a couple of high-level issues. Now we have a Division of Drinking Water that added about 300 folks to our family, and so we have over 2,000 positions with the state and regional boards and a $1.4 billion budget. And so when we're getting larger with the Division of Drinking Water, we draw a little more attention compared to other agencies around the state. This governor's budget this year, 15-16, include major changes such as an increase in 10 positions and $2.4 million to contribute to the implementation of the Action 4 of the California Water Action Plan. And for the new board members, I encourage you to be familiar with the California Water Action Plan. It's a 20-page document, very readable, and it sets forth the priorities of the administration. But the State Water Board had a very active hand in formulating the action plan. So on action number 4, talks about protecting and restoring important ecosystems, including enhancing flow in streams statewide. Another augmentation is related to bonds and technical bond adjustments. There's 21 positions and $79 million ongoing, and $100 million is one time fiscal year 15-16 to implement program changes required by SB 445 and to address action item number 6 in the Water Action Plan, which is the Underground Storage Tank Cleanup Fund, 20 positions and $39.5 million, and other expenditures related to that recent act, SB 445, which, as I reported last time, was a big, big deal. You know, we talk about the Groundwater Act and all this other stuff. This Underground Tank Act was a huge deal for our programs and our regional boards. We also had an increase of 55 positions and $268 million from the water bond, Proposition 1. And 11 positions to continue to deal with the marijuana cultivation issue, which is centered in the North Coast Water Board and Central Valley, but has ramifications and issues throughout our state. And so we'll be keeping an eye on that. You probably read about that in the press now and then if you get the news clips. And we're approaching it as a task force approach, a partnership among many agencies, and have had some recent success up in Sproul Creek. So those are some highlights of the budget. The early tea leaves, you know, the crystal ball on next year is that water rights related fees may go up over 20%, but the water quality related fees aren't expected to go up as much, which is, you know, we breathe a bit of a sigh of relief at the state board. It's never fun when we have to do substantial fee increases, especially in your programs and water quality programs. So, let's see. Now, recent activities, I already covered a little bit of the water conservation regs that were developed as part of the emergency authorities due to the governor's proclamation of an emergency. And on that point, we will, staff will be bringing to the board in February a summary of recommendations and options for moving forward based on that workshop in Los Angeles. You know, we could just given that the drought emergency is continuing, there's a 270-day expiration date on these regs. So when that comes up, I think April timeframe, we'll have the opportunity to consider just keep extending these regulations another 270 days. I would think, does that sound right? Or making modifications and having to go through a little bit more of a administrative process. So we're looking at those options now. That also, there would be the emergency regulations related to water rights curtailments that we adopted last year, and we're evaluating how to renew them and in what specificity. But we did send out a letter last week indicating to over 7,000 water rights holders that curtailments are likely in 2015. I would like to note that I thought it was a big accomplishment. It's nice Vicky's here to take some credit for it, but we successfully adopted a statewide NPDES permit for discharges from drinking water systems. You know, the concern about chlorine effects on aquatic life and too much sedimentation, you know, coming from the trench and that sort of thing, or from groundwater wells. And it may sound a little mundane, but this was an example for the state board to take an issue that's pretty common around the state and not have, you know, 9 different regional board approaches to something that should have some standardization. So we put an aggressive schedule in front of our staff to adopt it last year, and they succeeded, and I just thought it was a great accomplishment. I want to thank staff for their work, Diana Messina and other staff. And of course, the council. He never gets any credit, but he's helping us get work done. So that's great. I'm glad you mentioned the The UCLA study, the cleanup and abatement account approval last week for $2 million. Just want to affirm, you know, my sense of my fellow board members is this was strongly supported from our whole board, and it represents a priority for our board to think of innovative solutions to provide safe drinking water to all Californians. And I think it has a lot of promise. I'm looking forward to learning about how the technology of this point-of-use telemetry-based and, you know, and institutionalized approach that's kind of out of the box. You know, we have our Division of Drinking Water staff here. They're experts on all different ways that people get water in different systems. And this is an innovation, and we can look to them to help us make sure that there's accountability and the ability to perform at the highest level for reliable water quality for all Californians. That's a big deal to us. So upcoming, we're going to be very busy the next couple months. You know, first months of the year. I don't think you're going to be taking any vacations, Vicki. Or if you are, you're going to be doing a lot of delegating. But we are over the next year in 2015 going to be active on developing the anti-degradation policy, especially as affects groundwater resources. In the next couple months, and there's folks here to talk about desalination here in this part of the state, we're preparing amendments to the ocean plan to address the impacts to marine life of both intakes and discharges of brine, and intakes of seawater and then discharges of brine. And there is a draft staff report available, we had a workshop on August 6th, and all this can be downloaded quickly from our website by following the desalination links through the ocean plan is probably the best way to get this information. So we anticipate consideration of the proposed amendments in April of this year. It's been an extensive outreach effort. We've got a science-based decision-making process. And so we're looking forward to moving that forward. I want to acknowledge Region 3, you know, our Central Coast region, and your partnership on the Stormwater Strategic Initiative. That's where we're working on a statewide vision to develop an overarching plan for regulating stormwater, but more as a resource instead of a hazard or a carrier of pollution, thinking of it as a resource. And so over the last 6 months, state and regional board staff have conducted approximately 20 stakeholder group meetings around the state, gathering input on ways to effectively and efficiently revise the current water board stormwater regulatory programs. And so we feel it's a good opportunity at this time with our phase two MPDS permit for stormwater, which in this region is kind of the main regulatory tool. Other regions of the state have the phase one, you know, over 100,000 people, and each region comes up, and you have that with Salinas, for instance, but, you know, each region comes up with a different permit approach. A lot of similarities, of course, here in this region, you have a lot of experience dealing with the smaller communities, which we really value. So I want to continue to encourage your involvement in this Stormwater Strategic Initiative because of its nexus here in this region with over 80% of the water supply coming from the groundwater and the nexus of stormwater as a resource with respect to groundwater. We are also working on the trash water quality control plan amendments and expect to have adoption of those in the coming months. We've had some extensive workshops over the last summer, and we put a revised amendment for public review at the end of the year, and we anticipate consideration in March or maybe April. But it continues to be a high priority for the board. And then also we're working on bacteria standards for fresh water. That's another example, kind of like the drinking water discharge permit, where there's some value in looking at it from a statewide perspective. And so we recognize that we can help regional boards by going through this administration process and setting up the more modern bacteria standards, basically the E. coli method for freshwater, and for saltwater would be the Enterococcus method. And so this year, we anticipate adoption in about 1 year, and this year we're getting going with stakeholder outreach and working with the regional boards. And it really is for protection of the recreation with water contact. So that's swimming, but also, you know, wading and that sort of thing, kids playing in the creek, you know, those kind of uses that we all treasure. Okay, you know, I think it's worth also on upcoming activities. Another, you mentioned the Lahontan Water Board-led effort with the grazing, although many other, you know, boards are involved with that. Including my old board, when I was on the San Francisco Bay Water Board, we had grazing regulation. Well, the San Diego region has sort of played a leading role on this general waste discharge requirements for compost operations. And we've been working on that for a few years. We recently completed an environmental impact report of you know, related to our adoption of a general order for composting facilities. You know, this is the kind of thing where we want to find that right path with the right light enough touch so that we're protecting water quality, you know, from nitrates, et cetera, other pollutants from composting operations, but really not creating a barrier for, you know, widespread composting, which is needed for our sustainability. So we're working closely with CalRecycle and other stakeholders to try to get this order to have that right light touch. That's my take on it anyway. Okay, I would just say real quickly, you know, and to the new board members, we meet once a year as state and regional water board members in what's known as the Water Quality Coordinating Committee, WQCC, and it'll be in October this year, I think around the Columbus Day timeframe, or in Berkeley, we call it Indigenous Peoples Day. But yeah, right around that October second week, I think, in Sacramento. I mention it because, you know, I want to obviously get it on your calendar. Hope you can join us. It's always really, really great to hear from other regions. But also, we did something different this year where we started a little action committee on wetlands restoration. And I won't go into a long reason why, you know, long reiteration of why it's important. But suffice to say that, you know, we touch wetland restoration. We know how important it is as water boards, but we sort of touch it in the regulatory and the funding sense, but we don't make it an outcome, you know, like a performance standard of our water boards. And yet we all know that restoring wetland and stream functions are going to help us achieve so much, you know, in terms of all the beneficial uses. And so we're formulating this group to come up with an action plan so that we can gauge our performance using this type of metric as well as the other metrics we use, like, you know, permits issued, TMDLs attained, and all this, is how many, you know, wetlands have been restored in this area, in this region, in this type of wetland. And so we're pursuing this and encourage your participation. It's voluntary, but I think if the nine regional boards and the state board get together on this, we could start showing a performance outcome that the public would really support and get behind. You know, finally, with the legislation, you know, we've talked about it, and I won't go over all those different laws, you know, that were passed last year, but the groundwater law, there are a lot of questions about, you know, what's the state board doing with these new positions. We had about over 10 positions, I forget exactly how many, and so I do have in my hands a coordination memo, you know, that summarizes some of our activities. There's a lot of interagency coordination going on now, which is important because DWR and the State Water Board have different roles with the new Groundwater Sustainability Act. Actually, it's the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act is the name of the law. Shorthand, groundwater law. And we've talked about, you know, what the role of the State Board would be going forward, but it's really important for us to be lockstep with DWR. So there's a lot of activity going on now, different teams, a planning coordination team, a communication team, data management team. There's going to be a team around Proposition 1, the water bond, and how that's going to fit in, because there's $100 million in the water bond for groundwater planning, you know, and how that's going to be allocated in a fair way around the state. And obviously, here in this region, it's critically important. 86% of the water supply is groundwater. And so we're going to want to make sure that this region is really well represented. You know, various interested parties, you can imagine, have requested to have workshops on this new groundwater law and meeting with our groundwater management program as well as the DWR. So we're considering getting presentation materials together for such a workshop, but also recording presentations that will be available online for interested parties because this affects millions of people. And tribal outreach is a particular concern. So we're working, DWR is working on a tribal outreach framework and is going to coordinate with our folks at State Board. So we're getting things going. We're available to answer questions. I understand Eric Ekdahl has met with different staffs at different regions with the groundwater staffs, and you know we encourage you to reach out to us in that regard moving forward. And you know, I think I've covered a lot of ground, but not. There's so much more going on, and I'm sure I left things unanswered as well. But thanks for the opportunity to report to you, and welcome any questions.
Yes, and this is now. Thank you very much for your comprehensive report, as always. And now I'll look for my colleagues if you have questions. For Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that update, Mr. Moore. Question I have for you, you mentioned that the State Water Board has sent out 7,000 notices to water rights holders. I know there's pre-1914 rights. I know there's post-1914 rights. There's different categories of rights. Who are the 7,000?
Well, they're on the what's that? Oh, no, I don't. Yeah, I don't know exactly. There's a LIRIS list, so we send out these notices, but Ms. Whitney.
Good morning. I'm Victoria Whitney. I'm the Deputy Director for Water Quality at the State Water Board, but I was in the Division of Water Rights for 25 years, seven of which I was Deputy Director for that program. The State Board, about every other year, sends out curtailment notices to folks in the Sacramento and San Joaquin River watersheds who have post 1968, I think it is, rights. Those are based on modeling studies that are done by the Department of Water Resources that look at the water supply. Last year, because of the extraordinary drought conditions, the board sent out additional notices. They went to more people in the Sacramento and San Joaquin River watersheds, also, I believe, to the Russian River watersheds, and there are a couple of others where we had sufficient information to determine that there was inadequate water available for junior water rights holders. And so those folks got curtailment notices too. And then our Division of Water Rights staff, along with some staff that they borrowed from the Central Valley Regional Board and from the Department of Water Resources, went out during the summer and fall and did compliance investigations to ensure that people were complying with those curtailment notices.
So these are all post-1968 rights?
We noticed the riparian and pre-14 right holders. When you get to a priority that's higher than the 1914 post-1914 appropriative water rights, it gets a little bit more complicated in terms of how you curtail those folks, because riparians generally have the highest priority, but not always. A pre-14 right that was initiated before the land was patented has a higher priority than riparian rights. And appropriative rights are cut back in order of priority date. Riparian rights are cut back correlatively. And because the two systems don't mesh that well, it gets a lot more complicated. Those were noticed, but I don't know whether or not we actually curtailed any riparian or pre-14 rights. I don't think so.
And do you know approximately how many water rights holders we have in California? Is there a database that actually has a list of people with their rights?
Yeah, we issue permits by number consecutively, and we're up to 29,000 and something. Now, some of those have been revoked, but I believe when we noticed people for our fees, we sent out 40,000 notices. So somewhere between 40 and 50,000 would be my guess.
And is the state continuing to issue permits for appropriating water?
Yes. The state can only refuse applications if the state board has found that a stream is fully appropriated. That finding has to be based on a prior decision following an adjudicatory proceeding that the stream is fully appropriated. And so the procedural issues get a little bit complicated. There are probably, I'm sure, there are more fully appropriated streams, at least during the summer months, than the state has on its fully appropriated streams declaration list because of those procedural requirements. What often happens is people will file an application and we'll say, well, there's no water for you during certain months during the application season. And then they reduce the season that they are seeking to divert water in a way that we can permit it. So most of the permits that are issued now are only issued for the winter months. And in the North Coast counties, the state is only issuing permits for off-stream reservoirs unless it's on a class three stream, you know, where you might have sediment recruitment, but you don't necessarily have any fish or biota that the fish depend on. The board adopted a policy in 2000, I think it was 2009, to maintain in-stream flows. And we were mandated to do it by the legislature from San Francisco Bay up to the Mattole River and authorized to do it elsewhere. And that's what some of the 10 PYs that that board member Morris referred to will be used for is working on stream flow requirements. And the state board hopes to work with the regional boards on those as well. We had a discussion topic on, or a discussion item on that particular topic at our management coordinating committee meeting earlier this week in Riverside.
Thank you.
Mr. Delgado?
Yeah, thank you, Stephen, as always, great overviews. Regarding wetlands restoration, we've been, as board members, on a couple of tours where we visited as part of those tours, wetland restoration sites near outside of Castroville, outside of Elkhorn Slough, I guess. Yeah. And the people putting those together said if the growers had more incentives, if they got more credit, tangible credit, they could do, they would, they have the money, they have the land, but they don't see the motivation to do it. So once there is motivation, then they'd probably do it. And my question goes toward wetland restoration opportunities where near bottoms or the lower parts of drainages like the Salinas River, where we have a higher amount of exceedances, where the wetlands restoration would reduce surface and groundwater pollutants for a region, but they'd happen in a very specific, the locations are specific, but the pollution is coming to that lower area from a larger region. And monitoring, we put a lot of effort into, and you mentioned that in your report as it being essential. And then wetland restoration is being a little bit more tangible. So in the efforts that you mentioned that are coming up, will there be discussion about setting up a program where growers from a region would get credit from participating in a specific wetland restoration location that may not be on their land, but maybe downstream or upstream?
Yeah, you know, that's an example of one of the topics, you know, in terms of how we accomplish wetland restoration and what regulatory tools we have. So it might be and it might be an implementation of a TMDL, for instance. And it really is up to the regional board to work with, you know, the growers and the environmental groups and other interested parties to come up with those type of accounting systems. There are some examples that are underway around the state. I think of Lake Tahoe has a TMDL for fine particles sediment. They're looking at what they call a lake clarity crediting program to implement the TMDL. And it goes into, you know, what BMPs are put in by what cities and what kind of credits that they can get. So it has that flavor of, you know, a regional, a centralized type investment, and then the ability of people to sort of pay into it and get credit, regulatory compliance credit. I know, and then also Region 1 North Coast is looking in the Santa Rosa area at similar approaches in implementing their nutrients, TMDL, for the Laguna de Santa Rosa. And so I'm very excited about these kind of approaches. You know, there's a lot of details you need to work through because you have to show the accountability. You know, that's our job, is really to show there's a connection, there's a nexus. But also it's our job to have customer service and to try to, you know, make these good ideas happen. And so I think your TMDL staff, I see Chris Rose over here, although he's not the TMDL person anymore, but he's given us presentations at the state board that touch on these concepts. And so I think it's very ripe part of the wetland restoration discussion.
So even though it seems like it affects all regions, it sounds like you're suggesting that regions go for this rather than wait for the state to give us.
Yeah, you know, and also this is not a new idea. There are other states like North Carolina and the Tar and Pamlico Sound, you know, came up with a way for the POTWs to pay to have nitrate reduction on farms within a TMDL framework. You know, there are a lot of examples. Oh, yes, it is worth noting that this is related to a policy development at the state board on the wetlands policy, which relates to our 401 certification program. And so there may be opportunities for our regional and state board group to feed into that, you know, to recognize these watershed type approaches, you know, and we're looking at this also in the urban runoff sector, you know, in terms of the infrastructure for urban runoff drainage and where the best places to invest to create wetland or stream resources that benefit water quality, that improve water quality. And to be able to give credit for that, because we have to be able to get the expenditures justified, whether it's a grower or a municipality, they need to know that we're going to spend this money, we're going to get this kind of outcome, and the regulatory compliance is one of the primary drivers. So we should all be tuned into these opportunities.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so thank you very much for the comprehensive answers, and it was certainly nice to have you here too, Victoria, to give us a lot more specifics.